Hello, and welcome to What Comes to Mind, Season 2 of The Psychonaut Show. This is John K. Burton, MD, psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, and your host on this podcast that brings ideas from the history of psychoanalysis to solve problems in everyday life. In this episode, we're going to explore the fourth testament of the Psychonaut, the Testament of Reason. Now, along with the Testament of Birthright, which we talked about in the very first episode of this season, the Testament of Reason makes up the two testaments of faith. And the testaments of faith are about how psychonautics understands the layout of our inner worlds, how these worlds work. I was thinking about the word reason. It has such a solid, reassuring feeling, and it reminded me of Julia Sweeney's TED Talk. Now, if you don't remember, Julia Sweeney was an SNL cast member back in the 90s, and probably her most famous character was Pat. And Pat was a person that people were always trying to tell whether Pat was a man or a woman. And the sketch, looking back from today's eyes, maybe seems a little bit offensive from a transgender point of view, but I think it was actually really prescient. It was showing how preoccupied we are with the question of gender and the gender binary. And that has a lot to do with the last episode on the bodily ego. But this talk was called Letting Go of God, and she made it into a one-woman show, and she talks about something that I think has a lot to do with this episode.
Yeah, Age of Reason. What does that mean again? And my dad said, well, we believe in the Catholic Church that God knows that little kids don't know the difference between right and wrong, but when you're 7, you're old enough to know better. So you've grown up and reached the age of reason, and now God will start keeping notes on you and begin your permanent record. And I said, wait a minute. You mean all that time I was so good, God didn't notice it? And my mom said, well, I noticed it.
Now, the definition of reason that the Catholic Church is referring to has to do with reason as thinking things through, with rationality and analytic thought. And the definition in the Testament of Reason, Testament number 4, is about cause, reason as a cause of things that we're looking for. But I think the two really go together because we definitely have to think things through in order to understand the cause that this testament refers to. And of course, many of the reasons or causes that we will encounter come from before the age of 7. Before the age of 7 is actually very important in psychoanalytic thinking. But the idea is that before reason, when it is hidden from us, we are clueless. And our actions don't have any significance. And when we discover reason, we can take control of our lives. So back in the first season, I went through all 6 testaments and how they relate to one another. And so I just wanted to go back and remember what the Testament of Reason says. It says this: everything has a reason. Every action has an intention, and each intention is to solve a problem, no matter how irrational, contradictory, or even destructive that action may be in external reality. In the inner world of the psyche, that action made sense. So I want to tell you about a case that shows how the Testament of Reason can guide us as we go more deeply into the map of our inner worlds. So this is about a man, and he was working to overcome his intense self-criticism and social anxiety. He was a successful surgeon, but had to go through a brutal training program. You know, medical training, even now, has a culture of hypercriticism, and sometimes even abuse, and years ago, it was even worse. His anxiety was nearly crippling to him, and he was able to work only at great psychological cost, battling these internal negative voices. And in his work on this anxiety, he realized that it went back to his upbringing. He had an older sister who he adored, but was self-preoccupied and prone to violent outbursts. They would be playing together. He remembered back to age 6.
You're making us late. Let's go.
But
and she would suddenly turn on him and become abusive, verbally and even physically sometimes. He always tried to make her like him, but she was so unpredictable, and his parents never intervened. They just told them to work it out on their own. Sort of a 1970s parenting attitude in contrast to some parenting that you hear about today. So we already had one level of reason for his anxiety, but that was sort of an intellectual understanding that went back to his memories of childhood and putting things together in story form, which is very important. But often we need an experiential understanding as well, a sort of in-the-moment insight that comes not just from the head, but from the guts. So one day he came home and he found his wife berating his 9-year-old son for getting in trouble at school for taking another boy's hat. And it was true, he agreed with her, their son should be disciplined and learn not to do that kind of thing. But he thought she was being so angry and being relentless. He was like, I think the kid understands already, stop yelling. In his head, he hadn't said anything to his wife. But he wanted her to stop, and before he said anything, it hit him. He saw himself and his sister, and it was as if he was transported back in time. He saw how the critical voices actually ended up in his own head. They came from his sister, and he thought suddenly that his son might have the same painful anxiety as an adult that he had as an adult. Before we see how the Testament of Reason helped this man figure out his anxiety and help him with his problem, let's look more deeply into it. And in doing so, it's important to look back at how the testaments inform one another, how they build upon one another. We start with neutrality, which is the most important, the basic one. It's about not judging. And in this case, this man was not judging his anxiety. He wasn't saying it's bad and I just have to get rid of it. Of course, he didn't want to have it. He wanted to relieve himself of it, but he needed to not judge it in the moment. And that led to testament number two, the testament of active curiosity. So he could be curious about it. You remember there was an example of a man who kept missing an appointment, and he told himself that he was engaging in self-sabotage. And we learned that there's no such thing, really, as self-sabotage or self-destructive or even lazy. There may be such a thing, but they're just ways of describing, and they ask us to question more. It's not an answer to the problem in and of itself. Or like when people say, it is what it is. Well, what that means is that we're not going to ask any more questions and we're not going to be curious. But that doesn't let us move forward. And then we come to testament number three, the testament of birthright. Remember, we talked about how Hillary Clinton called Trump supporters a basket of deplorables. And that was just saying they were bad, didn't go any further, didn't allow us to think about the problems that they were trying to solve, or think that they are trying to solve problems, even if we don't agree with it. And all of these testaments, from neutrality to curiosity to goodness, brings us to testament number four. There must be a reason. Now, we can find reasons, like, for example, with people who voted for Trump, they weren't happy with their situation and they were wanting a radical change. But when we talk about reason from a psychoanalytic point of view, we're talking about what's unconscious. This goes back to the episode on the models of the mind, the dynamic unconscious, things that we keep out of our awareness, that reasons are there. And I want to look at what reasons we're actually talking about. There's actually two, I think. The first is what psychoanalysts might call the genetic, and they're not talking about genes, they're talking about history. They're talking about memory. In the case of this surgeon, he remembered that as a child, he had an older sister who was abusive to him, and that caused him to have this self-critical, self-doubting aspect. The genetic or the historical, our memories of ourselves, are very important, but they can be kind of intellectualized. They can be sort of rational. People often come to me and say, I don't want to go back to my past. I know everything that happened there. And they're right about that. But when we come across a memory that we hadn't thought of, there's a kind of aha moment. And that makes the memory important. Memories are sort of the scaffolding, I think, upon which our understanding is built. But there has to be that aha moment, not just our head, but our feeling in our gut of an understanding. A lot of times that happens when we come across a memory, but it also happens because we see it living in the moment. And this brings me to the second reason or category of reason, and that is that things have a function in the present. And we have lots of experiences in our lives and lots of things that we remember, but they don't all affect us in the same way as, for example, this man's older sister, or, for example, there was another woman who told me about a time when her coworkers didn't invite her to dinner and she felt very rejected, even though she had told them she had something else to do. And she thought about what an irrational feeling, and it led to a memory in her childhood of her mother not letting her go to a birthday party and feeling so helpless because her mother was in charge and feeling rejected by her friends, even though they had wanted to invite her. It was irrational, but because she was a child at the time, it made sense. It just came forward into her current situation. But these things have to serve a purpose or they wouldn't come along with us. It's sort of like psychological evolution. The things that are serving a purpose, or at least we unconsciously feel like they are, those are the things that stay. So it's important to think, what purpose is this serving? Now, we haven't done an episode on defense mechanisms, and hopefully in season 3, when that comes along, we'll do defense mechanisms. And that idea really talks about the function that our behaviors serve. I like to call them management strategies. I think defense mechanism sounds a little bit like, it's sort of warlike. And I think, you know, we're really just trying to manage ourselves, manage, again, the principle of multiple function episode. We talked about, you know, the it is I want and reality has demands and the superego says I should. And we just have to manage all of the expectations of these things. And things that we do that have the best management strategy are things that we keep with us. It reminds me of a yoga studio that I used to go to, and all the teachers would say, let go of what you don't need, let go of what you don't need. And I was like, if only it were that easy, I could do any pose I like, do a Hanumanasana split and just letting go of what I didn't need. But the problem is that you do need these things, and until you appreciate them and understand them, you can't let them go. So I want to bring this back to the man who was struggling with anxiety and what happened when he saw his wife and he realized, like, this is how things get in, these self-critical ideas. And what happened was is that he saw his wife was not being mean. He loved his wife and he respected her as his wife and as a mother. And he realized that she was so angry, so impassionate because she wanted to protect her son. This goes back to the testament number 3, testament of birthright, that she was doing this thing that he thought was troubling for a reason, for a good reason. She wanted to make sure he understood and wouldn't get in any more trouble. Now, we might disagree with the strategy, but that was the goal and it needed to be respected. This is what the function is, to protect. And he realized that the critical voices and the self-doubt in his own mind were also trying to protect him. They reminded him of his sister, but they weren't his sister. They were inside him. They were like a sister inside him who was telling him always, watch out, watch your behavior so you don't get in trouble, so you don't get punched unpredictably. It reminded us of Kill Bill when Uma Thurman goes on top of the mountain and there's that old Chinese guy and he makes her do this stuff like she has to keep punching a wall and she breaks her fingers and she can't pick up her rice with her chopsticks. The function of this very harsh critical master, like the very harsh critical thoughts he had in his mind, was to make him a better warrior so he could go into the world and take care of himself. And it wasn't until he realized that and said, this is the reason not just historically, but the reason functionally to protect myself, that he was able to put it in perspective and let it go. Now, you know, a lot of times I like to talk about a particular figure in the history of psychoanalysis, and they all have such interesting and amazing dramatic stories. But in this episode, we don't have any historical figure to go back to and talk about. And that's because these testaments, the testaments of the psychonaut, really just come from me. Of course, they're based on thinking in the psychoanalytic field, and they're based on my 20 years of practice, and really they come down to what I have come to believe is the bedrock, what's fundamental. But it does make me think about the age of reason that Julia Sweeney talked about, but in this case, not an age of reason like the age of seven, but a historical age of reason, the Enlightenment. And before the Enlightenment, you know, I think of the Enlightenment as sort of a metaphor for the testament of reason. Before the Enlightenment, people thought that things happened just because God was mad at them, and good things happened to good people and bad things happened to bad people. But in the Enlightenment, people began to question. They began to think about things. That's why it was called the Age of Reason. They began to think that there was a reason for things like the total eclipse. It wasn't the world coming to an end, or no reason for the plague, not because people had sinned, but leading to the scientific revolution that led to the theory of bacteria, Newton, and even the reason for gravity. And similarly today, there's a kind of pre-Enlightenment, I think, phenomenon where it's like if you have negative thinking and you're not happy, then it's because you're not being positive enough. You know, the law of attraction. If good things aren't happening to you, it's because you're not concentrating on your affirmations.
I'm just wondering how long that woman was doing her affirmations, because I've been doing mine every day, and I want to believe, but I just don't think it's working. I just don't think it will work for me.
Keep repeating your affirmations, and eventually your heart will catch up with your head.
That's the thing, though. I believe that there was someone out there for me, and I met him, and we had a beautiful wedding. And then everything just fell apart. And I'm trying to put myself out there, but...
Maybe you're not looking for love in a real way. Maybe you're not really trying. Maybe you're not really out there.
Believe me, she's out there.
That was from Sex and the City, and I have a colleague who actually says that everything that you need to know about life is in Sex and the City. But what's funny to me is that I knew a 14-year-old boy who very much said a similar thing to what Sarah Jessica Parker, as Carrie Bradshaw, says in that clip. He also had social anxiety, and he spoke low and worried all the time that people would think he was weird. He was quite an accomplished songwriter, but he was afraid of publishing his music for fear of being humiliated. And he had had a cognitive behavior therapist, which really is about looking at your thoughts and trying to change them. And she would tell them that he was catastrophizing. And he said to me, I never understood why that was supposed to be helpful.
She told me I ought to identify my irrational thoughts, but I already knew they were irrational.
And the thing about this is we can't always change just by working really hard. Psychoanalysis has a concept for this. It's called resistance. And sometimes resistance is unconscious, reasons we don't understand why we don't do things that would otherwise be good for us, like just change our thinking into positive thinking. When we come up with these blocks, when we say, I know I'm being irrational, but it's happening anyway, it's not something we should muscle through, but it's a moment to stop and reflect on what's going on. An old psychoanalytic supervisor of mine said it's sort of the jujitsu approach. You don't push against it, you let it go and use its power to take you where you need to go. And the testament of reason, I think, is what psychoanalysis uniquely has to offer in our attempts, all of us as humans and all of these different kinds of things of Buddhist philosophy and positive psychology too has a place, and meditation as a practice of calm or mindfulness-based stress reduction, and cognitive behavioral psychology too. They work. They've been shown to be helpful. They're all tools depending on what we need. But what psychoanalysis has to offer is the idea that sometimes the reason for why we are doing something is in our unconscious, and we need to pay attention to it. It might appear contradictory, or really more accurately paradoxical, like that jujitsu approach to engage with our negative thoughts, the ideas that will just, you know, make them worse. But actually, sometimes we need to step back, not tell ourselves we're being irrational, and look into this and say it's happening for a reason. Because in the end, it's what works is what makes a difference and is important. And sometimes what works is looking for the reason for these problems that we have. I want to tell you about another situation where the testament of reason can be helpful. And this example really shows how reason is ultimately about finding meaning. And it has to do with substance abuse. I want to be clear that understanding the reasons, the either reasons behind behaviors or even unconscious reasons, doesn't substitute for other treatments, especially for addiction. It really isn't enough most of the time. Sometimes a person can understand the reason why they are abusing a substance, and that helps them to break the pattern of addiction. But the thing with substances is, unlike other problematic behaviors like anxiety or procrastination, they're real things that go into our bodies and really change us physically. They change our brains. They change the way that we can even execute the testaments and think about them. So we really do need to have other treatments. But I want to say this in contrast to people who say that understanding the reason for an addiction is just an excuse. But really, truly appreciating the meaning behind even our most self-destructive behaviors can be helpful. So I want to give you the example of a 16-year-old girl who started smoking cigarettes. Now, this girl was not a rebellious kid at all. She's quite a good student. She took care of her health, and she knew very well that smoking was not good. And even as she would light up her cigarette, she would know, like, this is not something I really have a value in or want to be doing, but I just feel so pulled to it. And in particular, she knew that her parents would not be happy. And even though she was in total agreement with them that smoking was bad, she was doing it anyway. Now, this girl was a second-generation Eastern European immigrant, meaning her grandparents had immigrated here from Eastern Europe, and she had a very close connection with her grandparents. She loved them, particularly her grandfather, who would tell her stories that she loved to listen to as a child. And even though it was a difficult life, she had a romantic notion of this connection that her parents really had not encouraged and even discouraged. They themselves were very Americanized and did not speak the language of the old country and really discouraged any connection to that culture. And smoking felt to her, as she thought about it, like a connection to her ancestors. And she remembered a photo that she had seen of her grandfather with some other men sitting on stoops, and they all had cigarettes. And she realized when she would light up a cigarette that she would feel transported back in a connection to them that she missed and she had lacked. And this helped her to think about her smoking and think about giving it up. And I've actually seen this quite a bit with substances. Another woman who was the daughter of a bona fide rock star, but felt envious of her father and also felt like he didn't kind of include her in his sort of fabulous life in the 60s and 70s, was addicted to marijuana. She really used it a lot and had become quite socially isolated as a result, would have a whole ritual at her apartment at home after work and would kind of light up and sort of disappear from the world. But in her mind, she wasn't disappearing from the world. She was feeling connected to this counterculture, this culture of sex, drugs, and rock and roll that her father was a part of, and she had never been able to be. And this was her way of connecting, and realizing that helped her put her behavior in place. Another young man was addicted to opiates, and as he thought about it, and as we talked, he realized it was a connection to his mother, who was a pharmacist. And she herself was addicted to opiates, and he would go in and steal her supply of opiate medication in her bathroom, and it would make him not only feel high like opiates do, but also a connection to his mother and a kind of a soothing feeling that he didn't get from her because of her own addiction. And finally, a middle-aged gay man who came out of the closet late, had a problem with alcohol, and he drank every night, and he drank before going to bed, and he quite was using a lot and needed to cut back, and he knew it. But only when we looked at his pattern of behavior and using the alcohol always when he went out to clubs or gay bars and he went to socialize and to meet other gay men, that he realized that he was living out a life that he had never experienced as a young man. And it was important to him to feel connected to that sort of party life that would have been more normal in his 20s. So reason is about finding meaning, even in the most self-destructive choices we make. So what is the lesson here? It's this. The testament of reason is about finding meaning, even or especially in the darkest places of our lives. So be wary of people telling you that your thinking is negative or that it's irrational. Even negative thoughts serve a function, and we need to respect that. We need to acknowledge the function that they are serving now in our lives presently before we can find alternative strategies to solve the problem. It's the best strategy that your unconscious mind has been able to come up with, and it came up with it for a reason. Reason is not an excuse to stay the same. It serves our ability to change and grow. And when we understand the reasons for things, that understanding needs to come both from our minds, our intellect, and also from our guts, from our hearts. It's an alive experience that informs the mind, and the mind creates the framework on which the total understanding occurs. The psychoanalytic reason is often unconscious, and we need to realize the reason is unconscious when we can't understand it, when it seems irrational. It seems like Elizabeth Warren's mantra, where she always says, I've got a plan for that. We say, we've got a reason for that, even if it's unconscious. And one of my patients told me that the testament of reason gives optimism. He said, if I know that the cause of my problematic behavior is in me, then I can do something about it. It frees us from shame. Rather than saying I'm self-destructive or I'm too anxious or I procrastinate or I'm lazy, we can say there's a reason we're doing this. We can investigate it, find out, understand what function it's serving, and then reevaluate the strategies, the management strategies that we have, and come up with better ones, but only when we respect the way we have been doing things has been for a reason. And the last example that I want to bring up was pointed out to me by one of the many people who grew up on Harry Potter, and it's about Severus Snape. And Snape, of course, is evil. He's really like the villain. He does terrible things to Harry. Sometimes it's really bizarre how tough he can be on Harry for seemingly no good reason, and sometimes he even seems like he really has it out for Harry. And Dumbledore does nothing. He ignores Harry, and Harry becomes increasingly frustrated through 7 books and 8 movies, and he doesn't understand why Dumbledore keeps Snape around. But in the end, we understand the reason, and the reason was love. He loved someone. And that, when we understood, made everything make sense. So I want to end with a quote from Carl Jung, who said, "We do not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious." And that is the testament of reason. This is Dr. JKB signing off. Since we are exploring together, you make the journey all the richer by subscribing to the show on iTunes. And even better, if you also leave a rating, it helps others to find us. If you have a story about how the concept in this episode helped you figure out something in your life, send it in, please. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter at Psychonaut Show. Show notes are on the website, thepsychonautshow.com. And if you leave me a question, it may well be an inspiration for an upcoming episode. Until our next trip, judge nothing, question everything, and remember, there's always a reason. Bye for now. All the patient stories presented on the Psychonaut Show are created by me to illustrate an idea. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. The Psychonaut Show was created and produced by yours truly, John Burton. Art and web design by Hunter Creative. Post-production and sound design by Julio Gonzalez of Zimmer Media. Zimmer Media can be found online at zimmer.co. That's Ximer.co.